Já vás tady všechny vítám, jsem moc rád, že jste přišli v takhle hojném počtu. Popravdě jsme to nečekali, že přijde tolik lidí. Naštěstí venku není tak hezky, tak doufám, že vám nebude líto, když se tady budete nudit, že aspoň nemůžete být někde na sluníčku. Já si teď dovolím předat slovo panu ministru Schwarzenbergovi, který zároveň byl zvolen předsedou Topazu, což je nový think tank, nebo taková názorová platforma TOP 09, aby nás tady slavnostně přivítal a potom zahájíme první panel, který se bude týkat Běloruska a jeho vztahu s Evropskou unií. Pane ministře.
Tak. Dámy a pánové, srdečně vás tady vítám. I would like to welcome all the guests who came from abroad and thank you for coming to Prague. Jak známo, TOP 09 je strana, která výslovně se zná k evropské myšlence, k Evropské unii, jsme vysloveně proevropská strana. To ovšem znamená pro nás taky, že chceme celou Evropu. Ne jenom nějakou západní Evropu, nýbrž pro nás je právě na východ od nás taky Evropa. A tudíž jsem velice rád, že tady máme zástupce jak ze střední, tak z východní Evropy a považuji to na nejvíc důležité taky, že se dneska budeme zabývat Běloruskem a těmito otázkami. Popravdě řečeno, jak jsem dědek starý, a tak si pamatuju, jak v 80. letech jsem byl vděčný, když na nějakým think tanku v Rakousku, Švýcarsku, Německu, nebo kdekoliv, v Paříži dokonce, se někdo zabýval našimi zeměmi. Československém, Polském, Maďarském a tak dále. Nebylo jich příliš tehda. A vím tudíž, jak důležité je, abychom teď sami v tom pokračovali. V okamžiku, kdy jsme my sami nabili úplnou svobodu, stali jsme se členy Evropské unie, tak je nám svěřen úkol, abychom v té práci pokračovali. Abychom my byli ti, kteří v Bruselu a v různých jiných gremích pracovali pro Evropu celou, to je včetně západního Balkánu, včetně Ukrajiny, Běloruska, Moldavska a tak dále. To je stěžejný cíl naší politiky a proto těmito tématy taky zahajujeme dnešní konference. Samozřejmě děkuji všem, kteří že pozvání přijeli a budou nám přednášet. A prosím vás, abyste se živě podívali na diskusi. Není nic frustrujícího, aby v životě na nesčetných panelech, než když člověk se snaží na panelu a není ni žádný ohlas z publika. Tak prosím, přemýšlejte s námi a hlaste se do diskuse. Děkuju mnohokrát.
Já děkuju panu ministrovi a panu předsedovi, jak TOP 09, tak Topazu. Nyní zahájíme tedy první panel naší konference na téma Běloruska a jeho vztahu s Evropskou unií. Já teď představím naše řečníky, vezmu to snad protokolárně správně. Prvního představím pana Jacka Protaševiče, což je místopředseda Evropského parlamentu, který má zároveň na starosti východní partnerství. Dále přijel pan Reinhold Lopatka, což je poslanec rakouského nacionalrátu a významný politik EVP. Senátor Jaromír Štětina, toho snad představovat nemusím, všichni určitě znáte. A nakonec pan Aleš Michalevič, běloruský politik, který zároveň kandidoval na běloruského prezidenta a nyní tedy dostal, nebo předloni dostal azyl v České republice. Já teď pojedu v trochu jiném pořadí, než jsem hosty představil. Jako prvního bych oslovil pana Michaleviče. Chtěl bych se ho zeptat, jaká je situace v Bělorusku po posledních prezidentských volbách. A je totiž známo, že dochází k represím těžkým ze strany režimu vůči opozici. Je opozice v Bělorusku jednotná, je schopna čelit těm tlakům, je schopna představit kandidáta, který by se dokázal Lukašenkovi postavit a vést tu opozici silně a jasně? Myslíte si, že Lukašenko používá politické vězně v Bělorusku jako nástroj, kterým tlačí na Západ?
First of all, I would like to thank for invitation here and just briefly introduce the situation. So from time to time, first of all, Lukashenko was elected as a president in 94. And from that moment, from time to time, he was using political prisoners as a good in trading with the European Union. And last presidential elections were quite democratic. I mean that for according to Belarusian standards, what we had previously, so definitely majority of Belarusian presidential candidates were, I even would say, shocked with election campaign because we were allowed everything. I mean, everything we were, we got 1 hour of TV time on Belarusian TV. We had opportunity to speak with people, to campaign. Even, for example, I was meeting with local heads of police, with local heads of administrations. And everything changed during the day of elections. During the day of elections, 19th of December, I'm quite sure that majority of Belarusians remember this date, everything changed. So 700 people were arrested and got... like almost all presidential candidates were arrested. And we had after that really something what we never had previously in Belarusian history after the collapse of the Soviet Union. So we had several criminal cases against opposition leaders. I was one of such people. I was 2 months in prison after being arrested on the square. So majority of them had criminal case on organizing mass disturbances with armed response. No one really found arms on the square. And from that time, we have in Belarus political prisoners, and Lukashenko started to destroy presidential candidates one by one in order to destroy his private competitors, so in order to ensure that he has no alternative, no visible and popular alternative. And majority of candidates were came through the prison, and majority of them, like almost all of them except several people, were destroyed morally or physically. So at the moment, just coming back to your question about unity of opposition, it's quite difficult to speak about unity of opposition because majority of candidates, majority of alternatives, those people who potentially could be alternatives for Lukashenko, they were simply, like as I told, they are or out of the politics or... during last year and a half, there is very big question, and probably Mr. Jacek Protasevich, who is a very good friend of independent Belarus and Belarusian civil society, and who has very good understanding of situation from other side, from the European Union. So Lukashenko is basically would like to trade with political prisoners, and he was quite sure that he will succeed because previously he was this trade was successful. I mean, it's really very good because the European Union, for the first time in history, came with one common position. Different countries of the European Union telling that we will not speak with Lukashenko, we will not trade with him, we will not trade with political prisoners until all political... And we will start to speak with him only after all political prisoners will be released. And this is what it's really very, very important. Just yesterday I was in Vilnius meeting. It was a meeting with head of chancellery of German of chancellor's office of Germany. And one of high-ranking diplomats there told one very interesting statement, that it's impossible. So Lukashenko, he has psychology of a gangster. It's impossible to get any deal with him because he's breaking the rule, he's breaking the deal. It's impossible to, he's an unreliable partner, basically. And this is the biggest problem. This is the biggest problem for the European Union, and definitely it's the biggest problem for Belarus, because definitely it's very, very difficult to be united. It's very difficult to come with common position when majority of people came through prison, when many of them, as I told, were destroyed. My personal story, just to tell shortly about my personal story. After I was arrested, I was just openly proposed to become proposed to speak to public TV, blaming other candidates on organized mass disturbances. So basically, they wanted to use me against others, yeah, against other oppositional candidates. When I told that no way, it's impossible. I would rather be in prison. So after. Several weeks of pressure, of psychological pressure, they started just ordinary classical tortures against me, against other political prisoners. And the final step was they just broke me physically to become a KGB agent. So they told that the only way for you to be released from prison is to sign a declaration that you are becoming KGB agent. It was a very, very difficult decision for me. So basically, I agreed on it, and I signed such a paper. And immediately after I was released, I organized a very big press conference speaking to public about tortures, about the fact that I was forced to become a KGB agent. So you just can understand in what circumstances Belarusian opposition is functioning. So Lukashenko. Like a year ago, we had huge economic crisis, huge currency crisis. You can imagine if our currency lost three times comparatively to low dollar and euro. And definitely Lukashenko wanted to be prepared for such crisis because he had understanding that he was printing a lot of money without any coverage, without any... Just I'm explaining situation how it's so all the system is really prepared for breaking opposition, and everything is prepared for making from us, because traditionally we were really strong opposition with strong support within the population, and finally during last year we became much more like dissidents, because there is no, as I told, many people are used to be in prison, many people are in prison. Lukashenko is using all possible means in order to control media. We have no access to independent, to electronic media, and even he is using all opportunities to control internet. So just... coming back to your question, that really situation with human rights is really terrible, and we are working on becoming united and coming with one single candidate on, like as a personal alternative to Lukashenko. Thank you very much. I will be happy to answer all your questions. Thanks.
Já děkuji panu Michalevičovi. Když tak jsem to zapomněl zmínit na začátku, otázky bych s dovolením nechal až nakonec, po té, co všichni představí tady své názory. Nyní bych poprosil tedy pana místopředsedu Evropského parlamentu Protaševiče, jak se Evropská unie aktivně zapojuje do toho, aby došlo ke změně režimu v Bělorusku. Myslíte si, že bylo třeba správné, že evropské státy odvolali své diplomaty z Běloruska, pak je tam po nějaké době potichu zase začali vracet? Nemyslíte si, že to Lukašenkovi nebo vůbec tomu režimu nahrává ve smyslu, že si řekne, dobře, tak oni tady na nás jenom hrajou nějakou hru, ale vlastně to nemyslí vážně. Má Evropská unie, která má v současnosti dost problémů sama se sebou, dostatek energie a prostředků na to, aby se efektivně věnovala východnímu partnerství a zemím, jako je Bělorusko, potažmo Ukrajina?
So, frankly speaking, Belarus is not on the top of the European agenda. And maybe that is very bitter, but that is also due to the opposition's policy, which doesn't help us to help them. So the question is, the EU-Belarusian relations, even when we look at them from that point of view, those diplomatic crises, let's say, that was a quite a successful tool, however, for a short-term goal, because withdrawing ambassadors, well, it is a tool you can use. But what is the result of that? Let's say the isolation of the country, no channels of the communication, and in fact, to ending with no alternative for that country and those authorities, like no alternative than Moscow. I can't say that there is. They are interested in cooperating with the European Union, I mean the authorities. Perhaps in terms of political cooperation, they are not. They are not like Ukrainians, not mentioning Georgians or Moldovans. But whether they are keen to be, let's say, dominated, consumed by Moscow, perhaps they are not. For the regime, as it is now, the perfect situation is to be between and to make to prolong the power as long as possible and to make a business as long as possible. So for such a regime, well, okay. Let's say we can say that the leader of the country is not rational. We can say that, and this is perhaps not far from the truth. But and we cannot make any kind of a policy with him, any kind of deals, any kind of compromise, any kind of commitment, because we cannot. He will never deliver what is promised. But what is if we believe in that in 100%, so what is the alternative? Because there is always an alternative. We should wait and see until he resign or he will die. Long, long, long time. I mean, long time. Perhaps Aleš Białacki will be with a long, white, silver beard sitting in the prison. Well, I know that this is an open conference, and the journalists, so this is like only a metaphor. We can try to turn him down. We, let's say, some can try. So the question, the EU will do that? Nonsense. The Americans will parachute Minsk? Nonsense. The people of the people in Belarus will do that? Maybe, but who will lead them to do that? The Western pro-democrats who will lead those people, you know, to take over the presidential palace and to establish a very pro-democratic humanitarian regime? Maybe there is a chance, 1%, 5%, 10%, but more likely that someone, if such a person appear, will be sponsored, supported, and maybe even sent from another neighbor than the European Union to replace Lukashenko. So, should we make anything which is possible in those circumstances, or we shouldn't do anything? And okay, I don't believe, I am not naive, I don't believe that he is ready to make any significant progress towards democracy and the Western standards. He is perhaps he is not able to be a democrat over one night, one month, even one year. But when I look at the history of Poland, and I'm not lecturing you because you know that's the this is I mean that Poles tend to say that look at the Polish example, we were heroes, we turned down the communists. This is not like that. Although I was a member at the time of the students' anti-communist organization, but when the round table talks started in Poland in 88, who believed that those generals were real, Jaruzelski and others, were real Democrats? They had blood on their hands, dozens of people killed only several years ago when the martial law started, but the opposition finally decided to start that kind of negotiations with them. Why? Because there was a chance, maybe 10%. Frankly speaking, I was a very radical student at the time, so I was against. I was invited to take part in this roundtable negotiations, not the main one, but there were a lot of small groups talking on different issues, and I was invited to take part on behalf of the organization. I was one of the leaders to take part on the so-called the small table on the youth, the future of youth, but I refused. I said, I am not going to talk with those bloody communists. But so the opposition was also not united. Was not united. Still in Poland, when you can see there is still a significant part of our political life, big opposition party, the biggest one, Law and Justice, which says that was a betrayal, the round table. But the part of the opposition took the risk and sat to the negotiations and finally agreed on a deal. Was the deal fair? No. There was no full free democratic elections afterwards. The one-third of the parliament was for free elections. The two-thirds were booked and reserved for the communists. And that was clear from the very beginning. But that was a chance. And okay, finally, external circumstances led to the breakthrough, led to the breakthrough, the real breakthrough after those elections. Well, what was the major reason? The opposition maybe was strong enough, but not enough to force the generals to negotiate. Okay, Moscow was weaker, but economy was the main factor which led those generals to look for another solution than just keeping the power and executing that model, socialist model of economy, central planned economy, with extending the crisis and no solution in a reasonable future. And the question is whether such circumstances are around Belarus right now. Maybe not the same, but there are. I believe that, this is my knowledge, I'm not only the vice president of the Parliament for Eastern Partnership, but for 5 years I was a chair of the parliamentary delegation for relations with Belarus. So this is, you know, I have a knowledge of that country quite significant. Next year, I think he needs to pay back loans to IMF, to Russia, to China, a lot of money he will need. Does he have that money in Belarus? Perhaps only privatization is the way he can make them. Can he get a higher or lower price when the Western companies are, the only Russians are interested in buying those companies? No. I mean, he needs to have more contenders. And lovely for him to have the biggest companies from USA and from Europe being interested in buying the Belarusian assets. So can we have a kind of, can we use that opportunity and to make a deal, which is not very expensive for him, I may say. Because I have in mind the parliamentary elections in October. The parliament in the Belarusian system is powerless. So to have basically free and fair elections for the parliament is not a risk for him. The presidential elections was a real risk for him personally because he could have, let's say, lose. He could, okay, maybe 10% of the opportunity was at the time, maybe even less. But okay, that was his own interest. But having 110 or 120 MPs, and you know, and allow one third of them, 10% of them be from the opposition, what is the risk? Oh, okay, there is still that the whole structure will start maybe to get destroyed. But this is the price maybe he can pay for having once again better relations with the Western world. And I know that this is morally risky, but I recall that 88 and 89 in Poland, that was also morally risky. And will that produce any result? Maybe not, but maybe yes. And that's why I think that there is a time, once again the time, to open channels, not official, not to trust to him, not to say that he is a good friend of the free world, but to start to negotiate, to send the message to Minsk very clear. If you want that normalization, you need first of all to free all political prisoners, and secondly, to organize, to conduct fair elections. And even, as Alice said, even before the presidential elections, he was able to assure comparatively free and fair electoral campaign. So at least that was, you know, that was worth it to make a deal, a political deal at that time with him. And the opposition. Well, okay, perhaps part of the opposition will say this is a betrayal. But I think that we can also find the part of the opposition which is ready, and not a minor part. Like that was in Poland. Michnik, Kuroń, Wałęsa was in favor of those dialogue. There was a very radical part of the opposition, including myself, against. But okay, perhaps that may happen the same in Belarus. But okay, if the opposition is not united, we shouldn't look at all of them and, you know, and try to get all of them satisfied, because we are not able. If they are not able to unite, if they are not able to have a common strategy, one common leader, well, sorry, that's their problem, not ours. We are not able to get satisfied those from the moderate and the radical. This is not possible. We need to have our own policy, our own agenda, and, you know, and help those who are ready to help us. Risky morally, politically, risky as well, but the question is whether it is an alternative. I'm afraid not, because the alternative, as I said, sit and wait, and so what? Nothing will change, because with such an incentive, with such a pressure, he will do anything to introduce more freedom to Belarus.
Děkuji mnohokrát. Nyní bych se zeptal pana Lopatky, jak vidí on situaci v Bělorusku, jestli třeba Rakousko má nějaké svoje vlastní cesty, jak by navrhovalo tu situaci změnit. A především, myslíte si, že je správné, že západní státy, včetně tedy USA, chtějí bojkotovat mistrovství světa v ledním hokeji, které bude za 2 roky právě v Bělorusku? Jak je známo, v minulosti docházelo k takovýmto akcím, byla bojkotována olympiáda, jestli se nepletu, v Moskvě a v Los Angeles, kam na jednu nepřijeli západní sportovci, na druhou nepřijeli zase sportovci z východního bloku. Nemyslíte si, že se to mine účinkem? Jako, já si myslím, že na to mistrovství stejně přijedou země, jako je Rusko, Kazachstán, možná Ukrajina, udělají si mistrovství sami pro sebe. Jestli je rozumné trestat sportovce za to, že režim v zemi je takový, jaký je.
Thank you for the question. Thank you for the invitation. Let me start with your last question. I think politicians should not make a difference how they deal with sport federations and how they do themselves, and how they deal in comparison, for example, on economic terms. What do I mean? If the politicians are not able to solve the problems themselves, they can take young sportsmen as hostages. I was in charge for sport in 2008 when we had the Olympic Games in Beijing. And also in Austria, some people said we shouldn't send our athletes to Beijing because of the problems of Tibet and so on. And we had also this discussion now for a short period because this day the European Football Championship will start in Poland and the Ukraine if politicians should go to the Ukraine. I think we should not urge sport federations to stop to have this contact. I think we should do the opposite. We should do everything to bring young people together, young people from Belarus, to invite them to come to Austria, to come to Prague, to use the chances to have this contact. And we shouldn't isolate Belarus. That's my point of view. Of course, there are huge problems. Let me start with the human rights situation. I had the chance to attend in December the assembly of the Christian Democrats in Belarus. And in February, for the fourth time, Lukashenko refused that they can start to work as a recognized political party. And on one day after this meeting, I had the chance to speak with the president, and some hours later, he was imprisoned. The situation is, if I compare it with other countries in Europe, maybe the worst situation of all countries. So we should use politicians from Czechia, politicians from Austria, to stay in contact with these people who are brave and who try to build up their political parties. And it's not easy if they asked us, and they asked me, should we run at an election if we know they are not fair? Should they run there for this election if they know at the beginning of the election that they have no chance? But be a political party and not starting and not campaigning, and not going in election? it's not easy to give them some advice. But my point of view is that we should do everything to support these movements and to give them, on the long run, a European perspective. And to be very frank to them, to tell them that it will take a long time, but at the end of the day, and we don't have a finalization of the European Union, at the end of the day, we think you should be a part of this big European family in the European Union. And so we have also, it's my point of view, to do everything to support the private sector companies, that they have a chance to stay in contact with companies working and doing their business in the European Union and, of course, in Belarus. For example, and to give you some examples what we are doing concrete. In economic terms, Austrian government is supporting some projects, for example, one project with 7 million euro to prepare privatization, because we are interested that Austrian companies are going there. For example, Raiffeisen Bank is already there. They bought there the fourth biggest bank. And I think it is good for common people to promote their the companies because in this way we do something that the living standard is improving. On the second way, we should support these political parties. We, by the People's Party in Austria, we have a political academy, and so we had the chance to invite young Russian, Belarusian people working in student organizations, working inside the Christian Democrat Party and so on, to train them, to support them, and to stay in touch with them. And it's even possible with Belarus via internet. It's not a problem to stay with them in touch. Of course, for them it's a problem if the regime recognizes it, how they work and how many friends they have inside the European Union. And I'm sure you're right In these days, the European Union is very focused on its own crisis, and so there's a long agenda and a big gap, and then you will find Belarus and other big issues for the future of the European Union. But in these days, we are fixed only to solve our problems. Of course, we have problems, but if we want to have a future for the European Union, we should not stop to give countries like Belarus in the long run this perspective, this European perspective. And so I think each party and also here in Czechia, we should support our democratic friends in countries like Belarus. That's my point of view. And we should not bring political issues in a strong way on the level of sport federations. As I mentioned before, I was Secretary for Sport Affairs in 2008, and I had close contact with young athletes. They were afraid they would not have the chance to take part at the Olympics, training 4 years, and maybe once in your lifetime you have the chance to take part in such a huge event. I think politicians do not have the right to bring political issues on this sport level.
Díky. Na závěr dám slovo panu senátoru Štětinovi. Poprosím vás, jestli byste tedy nastínil, jaká je, co dělá Česká republika v této věci. Jak nyní vypadá vůbec spolupráce ve východním partnerství, jak Česká republika tento projekt podporuje a případně, protože vy sám máte zkušenosti podobné, jak můžeme pomoci běloruskému disentu, jestli a vůbec jaká ta naše pomoc je?
Když mluvíte o těch zkušenostech, já bych rád připomenul, že už v roce 2006 Bělorusko při prezidentských volbách odmítlo mě a panu tehdy senátoru Schwarzenbergovi dát víza a nepustilo nás do země. Nikterak to Bělorusko neodůvodnilo, ovšem běloruský tisk zcela jasně napsal, že Karel Schwarzenberg porušuje zákony svobodné Kuby a já podporuju čečenské teroristy. Takže jsme se do Běloruska tenkrát nedostali. Možná, že třeba to vedlo naši zahraniční politiku a politiku Karla Schwarzenberga k tomu, že hraje v evropské politice zahraniční diplomacie prim. Vzpomeňte si na ty volby 19. prosince 2010. V té době Lukašenko, jestli se nemýlím, už vládnul 17 let. A já vám připomenu ten nejlepší důkaz toho, že Lukašenkův režim je poslední diktátorský režim v Evropě ze dvou čísel. A to jest volební účast byla v celorepublikovém průměru 90,4% a Lukašenko získal 79,6% hlasů. Samozřejmě ten masakr, který nastal ještě ten den, kdy vyšlo asi 600 lidí, ne, vyšlo asi 40 tisíc lidí do ulic a 600 lidí bylo zmláceno a posazeno do basy, včetně 7 prezidentských kandidátů z 9 protikandidátů Lukašenka, vedlo už k první velmi důležité reakci, která vzešla právě z Prahy, a to od pana ministra Schwarzenberga, a to byla ta první reakce, kterou uveřejnili ve společném článku 4 ministři zahraničních věcí tehdy v New York Times. A to byl ten popud, který vedl k tomu, že ta reakce Evropy na sebe nenechala dlouho čekat. Bylo to 20. ledna 2011, už v lednu, kdy Evropský parlament vydal rezoluci k situaci v Bělorusku. Nebyl to jediný vlastně poput, který vzešel z České republiky. Já bych rád tady zmínil velmi důležitou spolupráci české diplomacie, ministerstva zahraničních věcí a některých občanských sdružení v České republice. Například společnost Člověk v tísni se velice zásadně a dlouhodobě zabývá situací v Bělorusku. Už před mnoha lety ještě prezident Václav Havel založil občanské sdružení Občanské Bělorusko. A obě dvě tyto organizace vlastně unisono ve velmi dobré spolupráci s ministerstvem zahraničních věcí se zabývají těmi velmi vážnými kauzami, které po těch masakrech a potom zatýkání nastaly. A já bych tady chtěl připomenout především kauzu Alese Bialackého. Ales Bialacký, zakladatel organizace Jasna, byl v Čechách už několikrát. U nás například v Senátu jsme s ním spolupracovali v době, kdy Člověk v tísni mu v roce 2005 přišknul ocenění Homo hominy. Zrovna tak Občanské Bělorusko, poté co byl loni na podzim odsouzen Bialacký ke 4,5 rokům vězení, Občanské Bělorusko se připojilo k nominátorům na Nobelovu cenu míru. Měl jsem tu čest s několika kolegy v Senátu tu nominaci také podávat, i když ta nominace vzešla ještě v době Václava Havla. A v podstatě se podařilo, myslím, že jste to zaznamenali, že ten výbor pro Nobelovu cenu je pana Bialackého zařadil mezi ty nominované kandidáty, co si myslím, že byl taky veliký úspěch té občanské i státní diplomacie české. Já myslím, že bych ještě mohl nějakým způsobem ilustrovat to, co tady říkají naši předřečníci, ale chtěl bych upozornit na to, že se stále nejen v oblasti Běloruska, ale i v oblasti Ruska a Ukrajiny setkáváme s tou neuvěřitelnou nejednotností v tom evropském přístupu. Já bych dokonce řekl, že v případě Běloruska, kde je to naprosto pregnantní, ta diktatura, je ta jednota největší. Ale když se podívám na Ukrajinu nebo na Ruskou federaci, tak tam prostě tu jednotu už vůbec postrádám. A jestliže chceme něčeho dosáhnout, tak bychom si měli vzít příklad z té české spolupráce, o které jsem mluvil, mezi občanskými sdruženími a státní diplomací představenou ministerstvem zahraničí. Já bych chtěl, kdybychom mohli dneska, jestli se bude vydávat nějaká tisková zpráva nebo bude tisková konference, aby tam padlo jméno Alese Bialackého. Já myslím, že to by měl být jeden z hlavních úkolů našeho dnešního shromáždění. Děkuji vám za pozornost.
Díky moc. Nyní tedy, pokud má někdo nějaké otázky, tak prosím, ptejte se.
Takže Lopatka, das ist so Frage an Sie. Ich bin nicht nur Tscheche, sondern auch ein Schweizer und weiß ich die Probleme, welche Sowjetunion hat oder hat sie gehabt, weiß ich ganz genau, wie es ist in Osteuropa. Ich kenne Osteuropa sehr, sehr gut und spreche meine osteuropäische oder auch westeuropäische Sprache. Ja, meine Frage ist einfach. Heute spricht man über Belarus. Morgen spricht man über Ukraine, dann vielleicht Kasachstan, Georgien und so weiter. Hat die Europäische Union so viel Finanzmittel, es zu finanzieren, und so viel moralische Mittel, es auszuhalten? Ich meine, wir haben da mehrere Beispiele. Es gelingt, wenn Sie jeden Tag die tschechische Zeitung lesen, wissen Sie ganz genau, wovon ich spreche. Danke.
I want to give you a short answer. If you look now at the real problems we face in Europe, are these problems of former Eastern countries? Is Greece a former Eastern country? Is Spain a former Eastern country? So the huge problems we face nowadays are not in Poland, are not in Czechia. The huge problems of the European Union are not in this part of the European Union. So in economic terms, if we discuss that Turkey may be member of the European Union and we are in a concrete situation, the negotiations already started. So I think the former countries of former Yugoslavia, they are much more European, than, for example, Turkey. And if I compare these eastern countries, you mentioned Moldova. If I look to Georgia or even to Belarus, as I mentioned, on the long run, they should have this European perspective. It will not be a membership within the next 5 or 10 years. But maybe in 20 years, maybe in 25 years. I can't give you a concrete date, but there should be an open and dialogue with the aim at the end of the day that they have the chance to be part of the European Union. You mentioned the second question, which is a vital question for each democracy, moral things, ethic standards, the fight against corruption. Also here, first we have to do our homework. We do it in these days, even in Austria. So, and we have a longer tradition in democracy and in parliamentarian, a longer parliamentarian history. But that's the task and of the politics, even in democratic countries with a long democratic history. So. To bring it to the point, I think Europe and the European Union must be open for these countries, for this area, and maybe it's a chance on the one hand to have a new vision for this European Union and not the daily problems with this financial crisis. That's one important part for Europe, that it can work, but it's the idea of the European Union is much more than only a fiscal pact.
I'm not sure whether the question was only to a colleague of mine, but I'm grateful to him saying about the long-term European perspective for the Eastern neighbors, because that's the issue of the Eastern partnership. But let me start from the detail, and there's an anecdote, the corruption. I'm not in favor of the Belarusian regime. I was one, Aleš Mikhailovich can admit that I was one of the most, the biggest in the European Parliament critic of the regime. But I have a colleague, let's say, who is a successful businessman, made a very good business in Poland, and then sold it to Americans, and with those money, he started to make a business similar, a banking services in Eastern Europe. So he traveled very often before the crisis to Belarus, Ukraine, and Russia. And he told me afterwards, finally he has closed his business there because due to the crisis, but he said, well, in terms of corruption, I can tell you, Jacek, when you are in Russia and you want to meet with a president of the central bank and you have a request, you can, if you agree, you must pay to the request to be done. When you are in Ukraine and you ask for a meeting with the president of the central bank, you have to pay before the meeting just to have an opportunity to meet. And in Belarus, no one asked me for that kind of a bribe. Which doesn't mean that there is a clear from corruption, but at least being also very fair, assessing. Perhaps this is the one of the least corrupted country among these eastern neighbors of Europe. But it doesn't mean that this is enough, because as you are absolutely right. There is also a kind of a moral and standards, and also concerning the democratic rules and human rights principles. And that's why the Eastern Partnership Program was invented, not to offer the membership soon, but to offer visible and a real approximation to the European Union by those association agreements and deep, comprehensive free trade agreements. So the Eastern Partnership Program is designed like that, to offer to those six countries, including Belarus as well, everything by the political union, including no visa, no border for people, goods and services, absolutely common market, and also funds, that kind of development, regional funds. But believe me, according to statistics I know, every single euro invested by the old European Union, let's say, by Brussels, to Eastern newcomers, Poland, Czech Republic, Slovakia, brought euro 0.3 back to the economies of those countries. Really, it is. Who is constructing highways in Poland? German, Austrian, Swedish companies. Who are building offices? German, Swedish, Austrian, Portuguese, Spanish, you know, all of them have a good business there. And this is also for us an opportunity. I mean, for us as the European Union, if we have those markets open, to make a new business. But there are, of course, conditions that the law should be, the business law should be compatible with the European, no corruption, or at least reduced very much. And those democratic and human rights standards must be also respected. Well, and this is something which, you know, which is not a threat politically for those authoritarian regimes. But okay, in the long term, it is a process of moving towards democracy. Not easy. The case of Ukraine shows us that it's not easy. Not easy. Not of them are ready to accept those kinds of conditions. Worth it to try.
If this is not successful, like you are saying, why is European Union quite bankrupt? Why you are printing money, and why the other West European countries who are not in the European Union are paying less taxes? Tell me this. You know, I am European. This is not a problem. I was studying in Warsaw. I was studying also in Russia. I was living in the Volkstheater in Vienna. I was living for 40 years in Switzerland. I am no professor for other things in Italy, and I am living in Prague. But I don't know why this is not functioning. No, the currency was coming down. You have only problems, big problems with many countries. Greece is 30% less than Paris. And you are sending there millions of euros. So something is wrong. I don't know what. But you are the chief of the commissions in Europe, in Brussels, not me. So for this, I ask you. Thank you very much.
I mean, not enlargement. I mean, the problem is, of course, with the construction of the eurozone. And the problem is, this is, you know, for me, it's a paradox. I ask friends who are economists or business practicing people, why, when we have a crisis, euro is still so strong? Why? Because this is not even a crisis of the currency. This is the crisis of the not having a united banking systems, borrowing money with no guarantees. And now there is a... I don't want to say that this is not an economic crisis, because it is, finally. But the biggest part of the crisis is in the banking sector. And that's the That is the issue. Nothing with the enlargement. Nothing with if the state of the European economy. Not that's the.
No,
but what I want to say that enlargement is not responsible for the current crisis. A different story and different decisions, and not being enough tough with executing those rules of the Maastricht Treaty is the main reason why we have such problems. The problems, even not with economies, but with too much money being borrowed for not reliable purposes.
Pardon. Už hodně přitahujeme, já myslím, že bude prostor k diskuzi, potom ještě budeme potřebovat zahájit druhý panel teď. Ne. Druhý panel začíná teď za 5 minut. Jistě. Ne, já vám to nezakazuji, jenom říkám, že musíme zahájit další panel. Říkám, že prostor k diskuzi bude, tady bude přestávka teď, aby jsme mohli to tady zorganizovat na další panel. Jistě pan místopředseda bude ochoten se s vámi pobavit o těch věcech. Já se omlouvám, ale nemůžeme zdržovat ostatní diskutující. Bohužel. Program byl dán, už přetahujeme o 10 minut. Já... Dobře. Já vám všem děkuji za vaše názory. Dovolím si shrnout tedy, co tady bylo řečeno. V Bělorusku mají prezidenta gangstra, který kontroluje vše, co se dá a který je rád v televizi. Evropská unie bohužel zatím nemá alternativu k diplomatickému tlaku, který vyvíjí na současnou politickou garnituru v Bělorusku. Žádná ozbrojená komanda, která by měla prezidenta Lukašenka odstřelit, tam posílat nebude. Počká si na jinou šanci, zkusí ho třeba vyhladovět, to se uvidí. Politici by měli více sportovat, aby věděli, jaké to je mít od někoho zakázáno jet na šampionát, na který se člověk připravuje třeba od svého útlého mládí. Rakousko statečně podporuje a sponzoruje mladé Bělorusy a Lukašenko je populární zejména mezi lidmi, kterým současná situace vyhovuje, což je 70% populace, to je úžasný výkon. Já vám děkuji a budu se těšit na další panel.
The conclusion is really real proof that we are in the city of Hrabal and Hašek. Thank you.